In 1980, somewhere near Minneapolis, a man named Art Fry was singing in the choir at his church. He put bookmarks in his hymnal to be able to turn quickly to the right hymns, but the bookmarks were always slipping out. A strip of paper and scotch tape worked, but too well. Hymnal pages are notoriously thin. They tore when he later tried to take out his taped-in bookmarks. Fry happened to work at 3M Company. He found out that another researcher had come up with an adhesive that had some promise, but didn't stick nearly as well as tape. One or two eurekas later, Art Fry invented Post-it notes. Incidentally, published accounts of this patented invention indicate that Fry had his techno epiphany during a particularly boring sermon. Ministry continues to be a very humbling path. Somehow, Art Fry was able to be present in a different way with the chemistry, with the paper, and with how people keep track of information. In the mundane sphere of office supplies, he was exercising a capacious imagination. Imagination is a critical element in creativity. The essence of creativity is novelty. Planted in the finite world of time and space, if we focus solely on what is, there is no space for the arrival of something new. You can't draw an image on a crowded piece of paper. You need a blank one. Creation requires emptiness, the opposite of our crowded concrete reality. Planted in the finite world, where do we go to find that emptiness? I say we reach outside of time and space, experiencing our connection with the infinite, which I would call God, but other names may suit. In that experience, creation expresses itself first as image, the union of an experience of the infinite with an experience of something known from our storehouse of living. This merging of the infinite and the finite is tricky business. Too much emptiness and we overtax the muscle of imagination. Too much tethering the grounded reality and we challenge that muscle too little. Either way, creativity fails. Somehow, Art Fry wrestled the infinite into equipoise with the finite. And an image was called forth. This is what we need to be creative. The appearance, as if out of nowhere, of an image. Armed with this, we can complete the cycle of creativity by expressing the image in a tangible medium. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, something new is present that appeals to the senses. Every time we do this, we stand with one foot in forever and the other in the here and now. We affirm that the deepest part of our identity embraces both the finite and the infinite. Every time we create, we move closer to that wholeness in which these opposites are united, even if only for an instant. It is joyous. And so we repeat this dance over and over again in matters profound and mundane. But, of course, we don't come to church to ponder the mundane. Does this imagination stuff have something to do with church at a level more profound than hymnal bookmarks? It does indeed. Art Fry was a commercial imaginer. In the realm of products sold for profit, our culture is an excellent incubator of imagination. But there is a deeper form of imagination that is of great spiritual importance. What happens when commercial imagination becomes a voracious animal that drinks up sound, swallowing up spiritual imagination, plunging the world into a cold silence of producing and consuming, getting and spending? My daughter recently told me about a new ultra-masculine cologne. I thought this was one of her jokes, but she insisted she was serious, so I investigated. It smelled nice, but actually was pretty disappointing. It just didn't live up to its image. I guess I was expecting a little more odor of octane. The new cologne is called Hummer. It comes in this squat, muscular box with the familiar yellow and black trade dress. You can order it on the internet, or you can order it from this catalog called Hummer Stuff. Two Hummerians are pictured on the cover next to their Hummer, probably a whole mile off the freeway. If only St. Paul were alive today, Paul's letter to the Hummerians would be a great They're wearing Hummer jackets and Hummer shoes and Hummer eye gear, formerly known as glasses. They're peering into their Wi-Fi Hummer laptop, no doubt visiting the Hummer Stuff website, sizing up the next cool thing. Hummer barbecue grills, ballpoint pens, bar stools, cocktail glasses, or maybe a $2,000 Hummer night vision monoscope for those dangerous safaris into the suburban jungle. Nothing is left to the imagination here. The Hummer trade dress can be the way you dress. All you have to do is point, click, and consume. Hummer culture is filling in the blank in one of the most important sentences rattling around in the human brain. It goes something like, I'm the kind of woman or man who, fill in the blank. Hummer isn't just marketing transportation. It's marketing identity. Hummer culture is not a fluke. You can hardly buy a cup of coffee without running into identity marketing. The marketing slogan at Starbucks is, create the experience. Not create a great cup of coffee. Or even create a great place to go sit and drink a great cup of coffee. The experience will be productized, sold, and consumed. It will tell you the kind of man or woman you are. Now, if Hummers and Starbucks don't seem relevant to your particular life situation, consider the practice of staging in selling homes. It used to be that people walked into a house for sale and they imagined their furniture, their taste, their lives being lived in that place. Now, it's different. The culture is so saturated with media images of the good life and what that looks like that there has been a collapse of imagination. If you get them into a candid conversation, the realtors will tell you that on their own, unassisted, many people walking into a home for sale today cannot imagine themselves in it. If you want the house to sell well, you have to cater to this disability. You have to stage your house to look like the residential equivalent of a department store window. Our culture has created an expectation that in almost any situation, a prepackaged set of images will be provided for immediate consumption. Professional real estate stagers are the response to that expectation. They figure out which department store window your particular house should look like in order to sell well, and then they make it look that way. Now, I'm not a sociologist, but as Bob Dylan once said, you don't need a weatherman to tell which way the wind's blowing. Commercial imagination is swallowing up spiritual imagination. In our quest for the commercial best, we concentrate more and more on doing the things we do well and outsourcing the other pieces of our lives to people we consider to be better at those other pieces. With this increasing specialization, the muscle of spiritual imagination gets weaker as the range of our direct experience gets narrower. And our outsourcing extends even to the task of finding out what we really want, which is to say, finding out who we really are. Those to whom we have outsourced this basic task of human living reflect the results of their efforts back to us through mass media imagery, which tells us what we want and who we are. In our intensely commercial culture, being better at imagining means being better at figuring out what people will pay to consume. So what we want and who we are is being defined ever increasingly in commercial terms. The ancient philosopher Epictetus advised, "Know first who you are, and then adorn yourselves accordingly." How backward we have gotten that wisdom. America is selling the adorned life, and a whole lot of us are buying it as a shortcut to self-knowledge and authentic identity. More is at stake here than the excesses of consumerism. The phrase failure of imagination was popularized by Shelby Steele, an African-American social commentator. In a famous article called Race and Imagination, he observed that minorities are always asking the majority to understand what it is like to walk in their shoes, because this is how equality will be experienced and become undeniable. Minorities know, he said, that racism and bigotry are always a failure of imagination. In the face of difference, imagination is the only way to common humanity. Without using the word, Shelby Steele was talking about one of the most fundamental ideas in religion: compassion. But how can we possibly imagine ourselves walking in the shoes of others if we cannot imagine ourselves in the first place? Without spiritual imagination, self-knowledge is beyond our reach. Without self-knowledge, we cannot feel compassion. Without compassion, we are denied the ultimate value in human life, the wholeness that comes from a deep connection with other humans. We are left with a silent, inert world, disconnected from the divine, a world of getting and spending rather than being and becoming. As the Jungian philosopher James Hollis has observed, the constriction of our imagination is our greatest tragedy and the source of our deepest self-wounding. We have a soul. And within the soul is the power to imagine the possibility of breaking the old mold and experiencing alternatives. Without compassion and imagination, our lives remain forever constricted within the small and the broken. Floating as we do in a culture that is hostile to spiritual imagination, how can we nurture this essential part of our nature? I believe the answer lies in turning our attention to the domains where this kind of imagination flourishes. Foremost among these is the domain of the poetic, whether it be verse itself or other expressions that transport us in the same way. The poet Shelley declared, "A person to be greatly good must imagine intensively and comprehensively. He must put himself in the place of another and of many others. The great instrument of moral good," he said, "is the imagination, and poetry enlarges the circumference of the imagination." And another great poet, William Carlos Williams, was pointing in the same direction when he famously said, "It's hard to get the news from poetry. But men die every day for want of what is found there." I used to think William's reference to people dying was rhetorical. I don't think that anymore. The utter collapse of our ability to imagine peace has left us with militarism, destruction, and death on a staggering scale. The news brought by poetry, the gospel of poetry, is the extraordinary power of spiritual imagination to fuel compassion. I don't believe I can have a healthy spiritual imagination without the support of others who share my commitment to this value. I need a place where options are presented that go beyond consuming and being consumed, where my experience is unmediated by mass-produced images, where my connection to the divine is palpable, and where outbreaks of novelty happen all the time. I need a place devoted to supporting everyone and seeing themselves as large enough to spread compassion in a broken world. Church has a greater capacity to meet these needs than any other place I know. I see it as an incubator of poetic possibility. When Jennifer and I came knocking here, we didn't have long track records as parish ministers. The long track records we did have were in law and business, domains radically different from church. But you said to us in many different ways, "We can imagine you leading our church." Your imagination reinforced our own, sharpened our ability to imagine ourselves as your ministers. And we looked at you and said in many different ways, "We can imagine you flying. Really flying." We hope our imagination reinforces your own imagination, sharpens your ability to imagine yourself doing just that. A flying church? What does it look like when a church takes wing? Here is what it looks like to Jennifer and me in our imagination. It looks like a place where you don't have to buy and wear the clothing of a manufactured identity, where you can talk about and listen to heartbreak and tragedy in an atmosphere of trust and confidence, where you can discover the deepest levels of who you are with the support of a community of spiritual seekers. where you can practice expressing that deepest self outward into the world, where you can situate your identity within an overarching story of community and culture and religious tradition and enrich your identity from these sources, where you can take on the daunting challenge of integrating your Sunday values with your Monday through Friday world, where you and your caravan can make a lasting difference in your own lives and in every life touched by your church. The animal that drinks up sound is on the prowl. Where will you seek sanctuary? This church is a cricket, practicing and practicing how to keep sound alive. Of course, a cricket could never escape from a beast so enormous that it could drink up all the sound in the world. Impossible. Everybody knows that, right? Oh, sure, crickets can hop, but they can't fly. Impossible. Everybody knows that, right? Please pray with me now. Holy One, free us from the smallness of our prayers for mere thises and thats. Incite our imaginations to run riot. Give us new and unclouded eyes to see that our given world is not here to be taken as a given. Give us glad hearts for the gift of creativity. Give us the perseverance to reach through the thorns to the stars. And when we have grasped the fullness of all these gifts, give us the courage to live the lives of joy and justice that we have only begun to imagine. We ask this in the name of all that is holy. Amen.